May it please the Court, Adam Zeiger on behalf of Defendant Appellant Enedio Rodriguez, Jr. Your Honors, the sole issue raised by Mr. Rodriguez on appeal is whether the lower court erred in denying his request for a minimal participation-based sentencing reduction. Your Honor, the lower court failed to conduct a complete legal analysis of Mr. Rodriguez's participation compared to that of each co-defendant, and in that regard, and in doing so, based its rejection of Mr. Rodriguez's request for a reduction on erroneous findings of fact.
You know, 100 pounds of marijuana seems like an unusually generous payment for someone who you've argued did so little. Was this 100 pounds given as a payment, or was it just being fronted to Rodriguez? Does the record tell us if it was going to be his outright?
Your Honor, the record is somewhat unclear as to whether he was to receive the marijuana for free or whether he was to pay a price for a different sum of marijuana. However, in finding that co-conspirator Ramirez was a minor participant, the lower court allowed a minor participation-based reduction to a conspirator who was to receive 200 pounds of marijuana. And this court has also held that one's financial gain or expected gain is not the only or dominant factor in evaluating these participation-based sentencing reductions. And here, Rodriguez argues that his participation is clear, as is the participation of each co-defendant, and therefore the court need not put too much weight into his expected benefit, especially given that his co-conspirator, found to be a minor participant, was to receive double what the court found Mr. Rodriguez was to receive.
Now, he seems to have been key to finding the driver in the United States. And in combination with the support that he provided to Mr. Tapia, why isn't that enough to make him a run-of-the-mill, in other words, an average member of the conspiracy? And we can't also forget that he dragged his fiancée into this mess by having her purchase a plane ticket for one of the conspirators.
Yes, Your Honor, and I will address his fiancée point first. Ms. Garza, his fiancée, was not part of the conspiracy. I think it's obvious that Mr. Rodriguez was indeed more culpable than her, but never was she charged with anything, and she, in fact, purchased a plane ticket unknowingly and did not understand why Mr. Tapia was traveling to Fort Wayne.
I know, but that's, you know, there's a lot of luck in all of that. There are plenty of prosecutors that would have schlepped her into it, too, you know?
Sure. And the record, though, is clear that she did so unknowingly, and I agree that, you know, a zealous prosecutor might try to charge her with something, but I think the prosecutors correctly exercised their discretion and found that her purchase of the plane ticket with the couple's joint credit account and the fact that she believed the purpose of Mr. Tapia's visit was for legitimate business purposes, to buy cars or sell cars, supports the decision that she was not, in fact, part of the conspiracy. The introducing the Mr. Tapia to Mr. Cuellar and Mr. Hernandez at their insistence, in that regard, he acted merely as a middleman. He simply found the guy who found the driver to transport the marijuana. He happened to know Tapia through family connections, and his assistance in with the transportation essentially stopped there.
But then he showed up on the other end also in Fort Wayne, escorting Tapia around and stuck around to make sure the drugs had arrived. He's at the restaurant, isn't he? As they're talking about what happens there when they go to get the sample, the others go get it, get the sample?
Yes, Your Honor.
That doesn't sound like minimal.
His accent supporting the arrival of Mr. Tapia didn't really support the conspiracy at all. The record shows that Mr. Tapia traveled to Fort Wayne, not really to...
The tourism board hadn't gotten him there. He was there for the deal.
Yes, but he was there simply to get paid and not to ensure that everything was completed successfully.
Yeah, but Mr. Rodriguez is hosting him at his home. As Judge Tinder noted, you know, driving him all around Fort Wayne. No, the court didn't enhance his role, nor did she find he was entitled to a reduction.
Yes, Your Honor, and I see I'm already eating into my rebuttal time, but I'll happily address that those points. When his support of Tapia was more... was essentially after Tapia's role in the conspiracy was completed. The record shows Tapia was there to get paid, and while the court didn't enhance his sentence based on Mr. Rodriguez's participation, the court failed to compare his participation to that of all the other conspirators, including Ramirez, and such a proper comparison would have revealed that Mr. Rodriguez was, in fact, less culpable than Ramirez, who the court deemed a minor participant and granted the same relief that Mr. Rodriguez seeks on appeal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You've eaten all through into your rebuttal, but I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Zager.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Michael Holtzman. I represent Andre Chavez-Cuellar, who is another defendant in this case. He's in a slightly different position, Your Honors, from Mr. Rodriguez. He got an upward enhancement of two levels because of his role in the offense, as well as basically losing his opportunity to get a safety valve reduction because he was a manager and supervisor under 3B1.1. What I'm going to be arguing, I guess, the briefs have gone over a lot of the details, and I'm sure the court is well aware of the facts involved in this case. But when you compare the relative responsibilities and relative involvements of Mr. Cuellar Chavez to everybody else, which I think is the standard that the cases that are cited in the briefs review, he really was just as big a piece of the pie as everybody else. Mr. Hernandez, who the court, I think, erroneously pointed out, was only involved in the stash house in its sentencing memorandum, got the buyers. Mr. Hernandez recruited the buyers, got the stash house, paid the driver, yet no upward enhancement was given to Mr. Hernandez, which baffles me because I think he came in from day one, from the initial involvement in this offense of Mr. Cuellar. As to Mr. Tapia, he was involved, according to the agent, who I believe the driver, the agent, he was the person responsible for the logistics of the sale. That's a key part in this. That's a big piece of the pie.
What in the record supports Cuellar Chavez's claim that he wasn't the owner of the marijuana? There seems to be some evidence that he was.
If I could answer that, Your Honor, the only two things are Mr. Cuellar's statement himself and the fact that he had numerous conversations with an unknown party, an unindicted and unidentified individual, in which he basically asked for approval for the dates when these would be available, the amounts that would be available, et cetera. So he was reporting to somebody else, which I think is similar to the situation in the case I cited in my reply brief to my appellant's brief, U.S. versus Vargas, where that individual was held not to be get an upward enhancement, in part because he was, in effect, a middleman for the actual owner. The other issue is, too, in that United States versus Vargas case, it's a very similar situation, Your Honors, to the situation we face here. In that case, the buyers were just and Mr. Vargas was determined because he had a stash house or a storage facility. He negotiated with the buyers. He, in effect, delivered a couple of times certain items of product to the buyers. He had, if not a greater role than Mr. Hoyer-Chavez in this case. Yet the Court of Appeals reversed an upward enhancement by the lower court in that case. I think this is very similar and very, and the court could use that as some precedent. My client did not recruit anybody under the provisions of Note 4, 3B1.1. My client did not have any involvement in the planning outside of basically being a buyer. What he was the supplier. There's no question about that. What he was the negotiator for the seller. However, Mr. Tapia had a major role. Mr. Rodriguez, as the court pointed out by this questioning, had a major role.
You say that Mr. Krellar didn't do any recruiting, but what about those folks that were at the Texas stash house that just showed up and started doing the loading? Isn't he responsible for that?
I think that the delivery was made at that point. That's when the delivery was made.
But there are these people involved in actually getting the bundles out of the stash house into the van.
Right, they were at the stash house. But from that point on, when the items were delivered, okay, like Mr. Vargas had his storage facility, okay, they had to get there somewhere, that product. In this case, they delivered the product to that stash house in Texas, and from then on, Mr. Coyer-Chavez had nothing to do outside of just showing up to make sure he got paid, basically.
That shows kind of a continuing interest in the success of the venture. He's out front on all of that. He owes a driver.
Absolutely. I mean, he wanted to get his money, okay? He wanted to make sure that when he went to the restaurant, he negotiated, he got a fair price for his product. But that's what Vargas did, too. And in the Vargas case, negotiation was not held to be enough, even coupled with being the supplier, enough to be have a two-level enhancement. I believe my time is over, including probably my rebuttal, too, isn't it?
It is, Mr. Holtzman, and like your colleague, I'll give you another minute.
Thank you.
Cade?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Nathaniel Cade on behalf of Joaquin Tapia. I apparently represent the guy with the least common sense because he's the one who hired the undercover officer to be the driver. But with that being aside, as we've argued, I think the briefs of all the parties cover the main issues. The thing that I'd like the court to consider the most is look at who was going to get what when this scheme was over with. Mr. Tapia was going to get $7,500. Didn't matter whether he hired an undercover driver or a non-undercover driver. Didn't matter whether the load made it there or whoever was driving it happened to take a few pounds or kilos of cocaine or marijuana aside. Tapia was to get $7,500, period. Judge Rovner, you asked a question about Ms. Garza to Mr. Zager, and the point is Ms. Garza bought the plane ticket, and the record she testifies on several occasions. The point of Tapia coming to Indiana was for him to take his $7,500 and buy cars. He was a car salesman, a used car salesman, and he was going to drive them back. That was the reason why he was there. He wasn't there to make sure that the load got there safely. He was there to get paid. When they were in the restaurant discussing who was going to get what, and I'm going to take my share, and I'm going to get my cut, there are no quotes from Joaquin Tapia.
Because he didn't coordinate the logistics of the shipment. He didn't negotiate the driver's price. He didn't direct the driver where to go and when to go there.
He told the driver where to go because that's what he was instructed. He did negotiate the price because that was the agreed upon for the driver to coordinate. My point is he didn't get anything extra. You know, he wasn't going to get 100 pounds to sell on his own. He wasn't going to get 200 pounds. And when you look at the overall scheme, I think the price is quoted in the record about $500, $525 a pound. We're looking at about $525,000, $550,000. He was getting $7,500. Of the five people there, he got the smallest portion. And it didn't matter the success other than once it got there, he was going to get paid once the ultimate buyer paid the money and that was distributed. There are a couple other things. He wasn't a lookout. He wasn't the owner of the drugs. He was not a seller of the drugs. He wasn't present when the drugs were loaded. He wasn't present in the, quote, stash house in Indiana. He wasn't present when the drugs were loaded in Texas. The only issue was he was to find the driver. And I think, as I indicated in the brief, I understand what the trial judge did, but I have a disagreement. And part of that is the trial judge insisted on a sidebar that we're fortunate enough that we have the record that Mr. Tapia spoke English. Well, he had been incarcerated for 2 years. And I dare anyone in this courtroom, if you're in a foreign country, or if you're living somewhere for 2 years, you can pick up a little bit of the language, just like his lawyer, Mr. O'Malley, said, Judge, I've learned a little Spanish. And there's certain things that you can communicate. But because the judge sees them talking together at counsel table, she believes, well, he must have lied. He does speak English.
But go ahead.
Am I wrong that the original agent spoke to him in English?
Well, that was the dispute. We can't dispute that because I'm never sure, you know, the court's not going to turn around and take a Mr. Tapia's side over a law enforcement agent. The judge found that there's no basis to challenge that. The issue became between the agent and his the other agent helping him. One didn't speak Spanish.
But you're not appealing the obstruction determination.
No, I don't think we can appeal that. I don't think that was a, you know, the trial judge made that. That's within her discretion. But I am saying that the trial judge, while in making sentencing, used that as a basis, and that we are fortunate enough that the sidebar was recorded so that we can see that she's pointing out to Mr. O'Malley, hey, your client speaks English, instead of maybe he's learned a little English over 2 years of incarceration, and maybe his lawyer has learned a little Spanish so that they can kind of say a few things to understand each other. I think that goes into the determination of her deciding that Mr. Tapia was not just a minor or minimal participant, but was essentially a manager. What manager only gets paid $7,500?
Well, we're, you know, we're a clear air standard for all three of you.
Yes.
That's fairly tough level to climb.
I didn't write the case.
The government claims in footnote 21 of their brief that you never argued for a 3 or 4 point reduction for the role in the offense in the district court. Is that issue preserved?
Your Honor, I don't know off the top of my head. Obviously, I wasn't trial counsel below. What I can do, Your Honor, is look at that issue and send a letter into the court addressing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, counsel, I'll give you a minute for rebuttal. I appreciate it.
May it please the court, counsel. Tina Nome for the United States of America. I'll start off with Mr. Rodriguez first, since he went first. I think the problem with Mr. Rodriguez.
Forgive me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Can we start
backwards?
With just a global question.
Sure.
The district court seemed to have believed that as a matter of law, that if a defendant is a supervisor or manager, that defendant is not eligible to receive a reduction for a minor or minimal role in the offense. Our only case on the subject seems to suggest that these two sentencing provisions are not mutually exclusive. So why wouldn't that legal error be enough to send Tapia's case back for resentencing?
I think that based on the facts and the specific facts of Mr. Tapia's involvement, his, even if that's an open question, and no one argued that to the district court, and I don't believe anyone cited Jackson to the district court, I know the government didn't argue it, and I'm sure the defense didn't argue it, I believe that he clearly fits the bill of being a leader, organizer, manager, supervisor, such that he's not eligible for that minor reduction. The Jackson decision does leave that open, but I don't think that these particular facts would present that scenario to the court. You know, Mr. Tapia, was a transportation broker, and he tries to say that he had such a limited role in this conspiracy, as do all these defendants. But the problem is they were involved from the beginning, and they continued their involvement throughout the conspiracy, and then they came to Fort Wayne to see its conclusion. Now, Mr. Tapia says, well, I was a car salesman. Well, you could look at the record, and you can see that while he may have had a car business, he had a lot of drug dealing on the side. He wanted the undercover driver to take drugs up to New York for him or to Pennsylvania. He wanted him to pick up another load of marijuana. A lot of those things did not happen, but he was brokering drugs that were going to go to other places in the United States. Mr. Tapia is not a car salesman. Mr. Tapia lies. He's not even Mr. Tapia, and there is a Joaquin Tapia. Poor Mr. Joaquin Tapia. Mr. Guzman
Did Tapia ever refer to cars that had traps or devices, locations where they could hide drugs?
He did. He indicated that he had cars with traps in them, and he had certain cars in certain locations. He dealt with, I think he called it the white, which we indicated would be cocaine or powder, and he also dealt in marijuana. And there are several conversations he has about the drugs that have been ripped off in the shipments and how he wants to get drugs in other places. But, you know, if Mr. Tapia had simply hired the driver and then said you negotiate your payment with somebody else and bowed out of the conspiracy, he'd have a better argument. But he didn't. He was involved in making sure the UC met Mr. Cuella, and he did that on several occasions. You recall on August 28th is when he met the undercover officer and hired him. He knew enough that that it was going to be 1,200 pounds of marijuana and that it was going to Fort Wayne, Indiana. He then, which means he had contact with Mr. Rodriguez because that's his point of contact, which means Mr. Rodriguez had enough knowledge about the extent and scope of the conspiracy that he wasn't a minimal participant. And then Mr. Tapia meets on four more occasions, or two more occasions, double times with Mr. With the undercover and with Mr. Cuellar Chavez in order to arrange and make the logistics of getting those drugs picked up, get them from the stash house, get them to Fort Wayne. Mr. Tapia then meets again with the UC after the drugs are picked up at the stash house in Rio Grande Valley and has a discussion with him about how much did you pick up? What are you getting? I'm profiting here. Now, all we have is a statement from Mr. Tapia that he was only going to get $7,500. Mr. Tapia lies. The record is replete with his lies. We have to go with the fact that he said he was only getting $7,500, but there is another statement in the record where he indicates that he is splitting this load with another individual, and I think he says, quote, I'm already profiting here. I already told the guy that I was going to divide the trip with him. That's in Government's Exhibit 6-1, page 8. So we believe that Mr. Tapia played a major role. And, you know, he only got a two-level enhancement. Really, he should have gotten a four-level enhancement because there were five or more individuals involved in this conspiracy. Now, Mr. Rodriguez says that he was didn't ask to be a minor participant, didn't ask that he get a two-level reduction like Mr. Ramirez. He wanted the whole enchilada. He was going for four. He said, I am a minimal participant. And when the judge tried to determine, are you minimal or are you arguing for minor, he said at the sentencing hearing, no, I want a minimal participant reduction, four levels. The guidelines say that those are for single instances of misconduct, a person who doesn't have knowledge of the whole extent. Now, Mr. Rodriguez, if he had only hooked up Mr. Tapia with Mr. Cuella, he might have a better argument too, but he stayed involved. He knew by Mr. Hernandez's statement he was expecting to get 300 pounds of that load. And what he was getting, Judge, I think, Judge Rovner, you asked a question, he was going to get it at the Texas price. That's what his deal was. I don't think he was getting 100 pounds of marijuana free, but he was going to get whatever amount he got at the Texas price, which we all know is cheaper at the border than it is if you bring it up north. So that's what we believe he stood to profit. Now, he only admitted to 100, but he also said that he was going to rip off the load of drugs. So, you know, it's hard to know exactly how much of the truth he's giving us when he gives us his statement. But we do know that he hosts Mr. Tapia, he gets the ticket, he picks him up, he's chauffeuring Mr. Tapia and Mr. Cuella around. He calls Mr. Hernandez and wants to know if the drugs are at the house and can we come get them. Instead, he's told, go to the restaurant. He goes to the restaurant. Does he just drop those two individuals off? No, he stays at the restaurant. He's negotiating the price with Mr. Cuellar Chavez as to how much it's going to cost for his portion of that marijuana. And then he even sends Mr. Hernandez to go to Mr. Ramirez's home to get a sample for him because he wants to see how good that marijuana really is. So he is not in any way a minimal participant, and he certainly is not entitled to any kind of reduction lower than the role of Mr. Ramirez. And Mr. Ramirez was going to give money to the driver. Mr. Ramirez did stand to profit and get some drugs from that load, but he was allowing his house to be used as a stash location. And fortunately for him, he was at the doctor's office and wasn't around much. Otherwise, he may have interjecting himself in a position where he may not have been eligible for the minor two-level reduction. When you talk about Mr. Cuellar-Chavez, if you look at government's exhibits, you see that he's constantly on a Boost phone talking to individuals in Mexico at the Texas border, asking him about drugs that have come across, talking about shipments that he's lost, asking how many bundles are available, trying to get the UC 1,000 pounds of marijuana for this load.
Where in the record will we find evidence that he was the owner of the marijuana?
Well, those conversations that he has lead the government to believe that he was an owner or that he was one of the people responsible for this load, because he is on government's exhibits, which are the meetings that take place on October the, I believe it's the 9th and the 13th, and I'm not sure offhand which exhibits those are. Those are the translated transcripts. You'll see that he's on his Boost phone having side conversations with individuals about getting the drugs across the border. I told him not to cross there, complaining about the Zetas having ripped off their drugs as they're coming across, wanting to know how many got across. He even says at one point, I believe on October the 13th, when they're going to the stash house in Rio Grande Valley, he tells the UC, don't forget, I just lost 525 kilos. Now, we're thinking he's talking about cocaine there, but there's many instances of drugs being ripped off at the border. They had enough trouble getting this shipment together in order to bring it up to northern Indiana. So I believe, Judge Robner, that he would, by his orchestration, his knowledge of where the stash house is, the fact that all those people are there loading those drugs up for him, and his knowledge of the 83 bundles, he's the responsible person. I think he's a big fish. If he's not the man, he's second in command. But I believe that those are his drugs, and that's why he comes to Fort Wayne, to ensure payment is made, because, you know, he's given these drugs up to Mr. Tapia's driver, someone he's never met, and he wants to do this deal with Mr. Hernandez, someone who's been to Mexico, to meet with him. And he's going to come to Fort Wayne to make sure that that price is paid. So I think that while they take a dim view of their responsibility within the organization and the conspiracy, that it is much larger, and that the court did not err when it looked factually upon their roles, their responsibilities in giving them the enhancements, and I think it was only a two-level enhancement when they could have been eligible for four. I think that makes Mr. Cuellar-Chavez not safety valve eligible. I also think that she was correct in looking at her 3553 factors and determining that that Mr. Cuellar-Chavez should get the high end of the guideline because of his role and because of the amount of drugs and because of the drugs fueling violence and the fact that he was the most educated of all the individuals and at one time had even worked for the Mexican government. And he was not similarly situated to Mr. Ramirez nor to Mr. Hernandez. Mr. Hernandez got a 5K and got the least amount of time, and Mr. Ramirez got the second least amount of time. So if there are no other questions, ask
that
the sentences be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sager?
Your Honors, the government attempts to deny Mr. Rodriguez's participation or request for a participation reduction based on the fact that he was involved from the beginning of the conspiracy and was to benefit substantially from the conspiracy. The fact is, the court, in its sentencing memorandum, found that Ramirez was also involved from the beginning and helped initiate the conspiracy. And the government's own briefs argue that Mr. Ramirez was to receive 200 pounds of marijuana from his participation.
He didn't go to trial.
Exactly, Your Honor, and that's why a comparison of his conduct is warranted in the sentencing memorandum. The fact that he didn't go to trial comes through on his acceptance of the responsibility sentencing reduction, and that is separate from whether he was a minor or minimal participant. The government tries to argue that because his actions didn't appear on the record, that he was somehow less culpable, but never describes why obtaining the stash house, paying the driver, and contributing financially is less culpable than introducing two parties and providing lodging for one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Holtzman?
I guess I'd just like to reiterate one thing that I think still is important about Mr. Cuello-Chavez's position. Everybody here had a large involvement in this, not just Mr. Cuello-Chavez. All of them had a role either as the seller, the buyer, the transportation agent, Mr. Rodriguez's multiple tasking roles. All of them could have been given upward enhancements. They weren't. What is the average of all the participants in this? I think the average is everybody had a piece of the pie. So I think to single out Mr. Tapia or Mr. Cuello-Chavez, when four out of the five individuals here were basically involved and had a major role, and probably the conspiracy wouldn't have gone on without them, I think is incorrect. The cases say that it's the average, above the role of the average participant. And I think Hernandez, for whatever reason, maybe he didn't go to trial, Cuellar, Chavez, Tapia, and even Rodriguez all had about the same role in the offense. As a result, I think that two-level enhancement for Mr. Cuellar-Chavez is not required. And I think a review of the Vargas case, where if Mr. Cuellar-Chavez had been involved in the, as stated in Vargas, principally responsible for arranging the logistics of cocaine deliveries or payments, which he wasn't, then perhaps the seller negotiator would have been entitled to a 3B1.1 increase. But he wasn't. Mr. Tapia was.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. I didn't realize my client was going to be thrown under the bus. The long and short of it is, the one thing I want to point out is counsel said, cited from page 10 of her brief, quote, and this is from Tapia, I'm already profiting here. I already told the guy that I was going to divide the trip with him. Who's the guy? What was he going to divide? There is no evidence other than he was going to receive $7,500. Is he profiting by finding somebody? Sure. Dividing $7,500, it's not a ton of effort. So, again, when you talk about who had what role and who was a participant, under 3B1.2, a minimal participant is plainly among the least couple of those involved in the conduct. Well, who is least culpable other than Mr. Tapia? The guy who's only going to get $7,500, the guy who, you know, has not going to get any of the drugs, not dividing anything up, is not in the restaurant bragging about what he's going to do. The guy who's sitting there just waiting to get the money to buy his cars to transport them back. That's it. He was a minimal participant. He should not have gotten the enhancement as a manager, and it should have been a downward departure. Thank you.
As to all three defense counsel, you were all court-appointed, and the court sincerely appreciates your work and effort on behalf of your clients in this case. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement, and we move to the third case this morning.